Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Evans. Thank you, all of you, for welcoming me so kindly. I am honored to be here, a guest of the Philadelphia Society. I believe firmly in all it represents. And when I arrived yesterday, it came to mind one time around the time of the Iran-Contra affair that I happened to run into Admiral Poindexter in Washington, and he looked at me, you know, he says, "Oh, it sure feels good to see a friendly face." And that's what happened to me when I came yesterday. I not only saw friendly faces, but people with whom I had associated, people who had supported our cause back in the 80s, and I felt at home. I felt like one of you, and uphold the same values that you all have. I must commend publicly a lady, one of your group, Ms. Diana Denman, who has been a crusader for us, not back in the 80s, but now in the late 90s. Recently, I was in Washington. I went there specifically to lobby for a cause which is dear to me, and I called her. I said what I was doing, and she immediately began working, and before I knew it, she had a legion of people, of important people, working for us. And this cause is the cause of Nicaraguans and other Central Americans who came to the United States as refugees in the 1980s that were welcome, well, were even stimulated to come to this country to isolate the Sandinistas. And last year, a fellow Texan, I'm sorry to say, and not only a fellow Texan, but a fellow San Antonian, sponsored a law which changed the rules for these people and made it practically impossible to obtain some kind of legal status for these Nicaraguans and also for Salvadorians and Guatemalans who had come on account of civil strife, of wars against the communists in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, and in El Salvador. Fortunately, we have people like Senator Connie Mack, Senator Bob Graham from Florida, Congressman Diaz-Balart, and a host of others from different parts of the country who are now supporting a bill, first in the Senate, and if it's approved in the Senate, it will come to conference in the House. Unfortunately, these Nicaraguans who have been threatened with deportation will be able, if they fulfill the requirements of the immigration law, to remain in this country and to eventually obtain a legal status and possibly eventually become American citizens, people who have lived here for more than 10 years, and who are working, who pay taxes, who have in Florida alone, the Nicaraguan have 4,000 businesses in Florida, and they've had their children born here in the United States. And hopefully everything is rolling, and it's on account of the help that we have received from Diana. I thank Diana. While in Washington, the CIA celebrated its 50th anniversary. And I met with General Singlov, who was invited to the celebration. And I remember a couple of stories which are kind of funny, and I want to share with you. One of them was they used to meet with us in hotels. Huh? They would take a hotel room and have a meeting there. Well, this time we met at a hotel near the airport in Miami, and someone said, well, why don't we order coffee? Hmm? And we called, and he was told, no, because it's CIA. And so he said, that's very strange, you know. So he hung up and told the story, and this CIA man was really nervous, and she told somebody, why don't you call? And the same story repeated. No, because it's CIA. And it was incredible that they wouldn't serve because it was CIA. Finally, someone else who was a little smarter did call and say, okay, what is this CIA? Cash in advance. But they really, I mean, the CIA people really suffered through this one. I mean, they couldn't imagine how it could have happened that they had been discovered. And I really didn't know why they were so, I mean, they used pseudonyms, and they were very, very careful as to their identity. We never saw them in their office in Miami. Yet in Washington, I went a few times to visit Mr. Casey. We used to call him Uncle Bill, over in his office in the headquarters and in the old executive office building where he had an office. But anyway, they were so careful on this business of identity. And one time I played a joke on one of them. He came down to Honduras. I already knew that he was using a pseudonym. He came to Honduras, where we all were there, and they had come from some kind of a meeting or something. He had his bag up on his shoulder. And I looked at the tag on it, you know, and it had his real name. Huh? And I say, I forget the pseudonym, but it was Alan Fires. He was the head of the Central American Task Force. That was his real name. And I said, so-and-so. He said, you got someone else's bag. So he looked at it and said, oh, damn! You know, he got it. The name that he had tried to keep from us, I mean, was on the tag on the... Well, some of the funny stories that we encounter, you know. And there are more, but I mean, I guess you haven't come to hear about the CIA here. Anyway, I would like to start by talking about the historical relation between the United States and Nicaragua. Today, I heard someone said that one of the speakers said that back in the 1800s, at the time of just before the Louisiana Purchase, a French army that had come to take over Louisiana, but would stop in Haiti to fix things, that was defeated in Haiti. Well, that was in the 1800s. In Nicaragua, in the 1700s, we were fighting the British. At the time of American independence, We were at war with the British, and well, maybe there was not a big British army there, but at least we did divert, we did help, in a way, this country to achieve its independence from Britain. Then the United States became interested in Nicaragua and helped us against the British. In 1850, the Clayton-Bulwer Treaty was signed, and that kind of distanced the British, and that was the idea, from Nicaragua on account of the possibility of a canal there. And the United States didn't want a European country to build the canal in Nicaragua. We wanted first option, which was logical. I mean, we shared the same continent, and the British desisted on taking the east coast of Nicaragua, and it didn't happen to us what happened to Guatemala. The British kept a colony in Guatemala, and that colony is now the independent country of Belize. We were able to recuperate the Atlantic coast. Or at least the chief of the army. But in Nicaragua, I mean, we had the doubtful, I would say, fortune to have had this fellow from Tennessee who was promoting slavery south of the border, who raided Mexico, and who came to Nicaragua at the invitation of a warring political faction in the country, proclaimed himself president, and was thrown out in 1856. And he tried again, and in 1860 he was executed in Honduras. This all goes to show that there has been a close relationship between this country and our country. After Walker, we had 37 years of conservative government in Nicaragua, and that conservative government laid the foundations of the country, modernized the country, and it was a conservative who was the first president of Nicaragua, because before they were only heads of state. And it was under these conservative governments that Nicaragua became known as the Central American Switzerland, which is a title that we lost when the liberals came to power over the years, and when the Sandinistas came worse, to Costa Rica. Now Costa Rica is known as the Switzerland of Central America. Anyway, these relations became even closer in 1811 when we had the Marine Corps in Nicaragua. Marines were sent to Nicaragua to, as they were sent to Dominican Republic and to Haiti and to other Latin American countries to pacify warring factions of liberals and conservatives, and then remain in Nicaragua until 1933. The communists referred to them as a force of occupation. Nicaraguans in general referred to them only as the Marines. They did, of course, have some military control of the country, together with the ongoing government. But on the other hand, they were liked, they were appreciated, they were not seen as an enemy force occupying the country, but as a force helping to keep the country together. And so much so that many of the Marines married Nicaraguans, stayed in Nicaragua, Baseball is the national sport of the country. Of course, we Nicaraguans would have preferred if they had not come, and it had been American businessmen who had come to Nicaragua and popularized baseball and invested in the country and developed close ties with this country, but not through a force, but through business and private enterprise. When the Second World War, Somoza, who had just acceded to power a few years before, was the first to declare war on the Axis powers and on Japan, the first in Latin America. That kind of carried him sympathy from the government of this country. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt has been quoted as saying, he is an SOB, but he's our SOB. And through this friendship or this close relation, we had the Somoza family govern Nicaragua for 40 years. And in 1978, when a very serious challenge developed, when the Sandinistas were already a small force, but very active, we had a mediation team come down, headed by Ambassador Bowdler, Bill Bowdler, and we almost had the fortune of easing Somoza out of power. However, he became very stubborn, and his stubbornness was due to the fact that the President of the United States at that time, Jimmy Carter, just could not read the situation, didn't realize that this country weighs so much in our countries and in the world that not doing something or not doing what he was supposed to do had a real detrimental effect. And Somoza became encouraged because he thought that Carter didn't have the force or didn't have the will to really push him out. A word from Carter would have been sufficient, and he never said it. And so the people of Nicaragua, who had been very, very, how would I say, not dependent, but who had trust in this country and who had respect for this country and who thought that this country was finally going to make a decision in order not to have the communists come in and take care of the situation, saw that there was no willpower on the part of the Carter administration, and saw the Sandinistas were supported by a great many people, some of them who joined me later as directors of the resistance, thought that, well, let's help the Sandinistas throw Somoza out, and then we throw them out. And that was a terrible mistake. The Sandinistas, as soon as they acceded to power, brought in the Cubans, brought in the Soviets, brought in the East Germans, and really converted Nicaragua in a servant country of communism. I will not go through in detail everything they did, but they took away property. They staticized the whole country. They jailed people. When Somoza left power, there were 55 political prisoners. When the Sandinistas took over, a year after they took over, they had over 10,000 political prisoners. Thank God there are no political prisoners today. But that was the situation. Things in Nicaragua got so bad because I stayed in the country 3 years after the takeover. It was in July of 1979. I left in December of 1982 because I could not live with myself accepting all this submission. And so I left to join the effort to overthrow the Sandinistas in 1982. You all probably read about it in the papers. It was a really difficult war. We had an on and off support on the part of the United States. The Liberal Democrats in Congress made life impossible for us. The liberal press treated us like we were delinquents, like we were thieves or drug traffickers. Everything was invented about us, and we had a terrible, terrible press. There were the conservative press was helpful, but it was not deciding. It used to happen, as I was talking to Stan here, like in El Salvador, you know, if a communist was killed for whatever reason, then it were the death squads. If someone on the other side was killed, well, that was the guerrilla. I mean, there were ways to discriminate on those of us who were on the right, and those on the left could make no mistakes, and that happened to us. Finally, in 1986, we were given a real support, the famous $100 million by the United States government. They were administered by the CIA, and we really had the Sandinistas cornered. So much so that they, by 1988, were already under pressure from the other Central American countries and other Latin American countries, ready to accept free elections. Elections that they were sure they were going to win. So much so that when a new constitution was promulgated in 1987. It was a presidential one. It gave the president powers that were overwhelming. But the results in 1990 were that Violeta Chamorro won. I was not allowed. I believe I was the only one because all the other people who were with me in the resistance, director level or other lower levels, were allowed to come back. I wasn't allowed to come back. I came back until after Violeta Chamorro had taken over. And I went back. I was maybe afraid. That's something that's been asked of me. Were you afraid? Oh, yes, yes. I said I was afraid, but I didn't have the money nor the willingness to hire a corps of bodyguards or anything like that. So I went alone all over. With time, people told me, well, you should get yourself a chauffeur. So I did get myself a chauffeur, and in order not to be going alone as I used to, nothing has ever happened. I haven't even been threatened. Other people, yes, have been killed. Maybe the fact that I was out in the open kept them from any attempt on my life. Enrique Bermudez was killed. He was the military chief of the resistance, as were many other commanders of the resistance. It has been a very, very difficult struggle. We continue to struggle. In 1996, we had, again, free elections last year. The candidate of the Liberal Party, but liberal in Nicaragua doesn't mean exactly what it means here. There might be some of the classical liberals who have become very conservative, so much so that the Alemán government in Nicaragua is labeled the conservative government of President Alemán. Anyway, there were 28 candidates in the election. Elections were very polarized. 51% of the vote went to Alemán. 30-some-odd percent of the vote went to the 38% went to the Sandinistas. And the rest was distributed amongst 24 candidates, because there were about 28 presidential candidates. I was elected to the assembly for the Conservative Party. The assembly is distributed. There are 41 liberals, 37 Sandinistas, and 15 from other parties, of which 6 are conservatives, but not all of us belong to the same Conservative Party, because the Conservative Party is, there are 3 factions. I mean, there's 1 Conservative Party and 2 conservative factions. What is the situation in Nicaragua today? We have over 50% unemployment. Exports, which is a very good index to judge the situation of the country, are $600 million. That is, I should put it this way. Exports in 1979 were pretty close to $1 billion before the Sandinistas came over. Then it went down to $200 million. Now we are up to $600 million. So we haven't even reached the figure that we had in 1979, notwithstanding devaluation and all of that. So you can well imagine that the economic situation is not good. Property. That is a very, very difficult problem. It has been, how would I say, it started to be solved. Those who were confiscated wanted one way. Those who confiscated, that were the Sandinistas, of course, want to keep the property. Some of that property is serving a social service. For instance, those that were given to cooperatives and those that were given to very, very small or very poor people. And there are properties that were valuable that have been stolen by the Sandinistas. There have been lots of negotiations, and now a new property law is going to be discussed in the assembly. It will be very difficult to satisfy everyone, but we will try to do our best to come up with a law that's just. American citizens have been given a special treatment in the sense that the government has tried to settle their claims even ahead of those from Nicaraguans. However, only about 30 to 40% of American citizens have been paid or have been or have gotten their property back. There are positive signs. The police has been doing its duty. It was founded by the Sandinistas. It was called the Sandinista Police. Nonetheless, they have come out and imposed the law, even against Sandinista unions and against Sandinista mobs. They have battled with pro-Sandinista students who, as recently as August, were provoking disturbances in the city of Managua on account of a claim for a higher percentage of the national budget to be given to the universities, which was really unjust because they wanted all of the budget for themselves and or the education budget and a very small part for primary and secondary schools. And these students are provoked by the Sandinistas. The Sandinistas are really an obstacle, not necessarily to freedom, because there is freedom in Nicaragua, but to development, to growth. Daniel Ortega is still what he used to be, a wild man, always opposing whatever sounds for private enterprise, whatever sounds for freedom. He keeps very close ties with Fidel Castro. His brother Humberto, who was chief of the army, is retired, and is quiet. Nobody sees him. Nobody hears from him. He stepped aside. And talking about the chief of the army, well, the army, the Sandinista army, is now called the National Army. And the same as the police has given very clear signals that it is a national army, that it's not a party army anymore, even though the higher officials are or were Sandinistas and were dedicated Sandinistas, but the situation is such that they have come under the orders of the president, and so much so I would say that the actual chief of the army, who was a number two man of the Sandinista army when it was called Sandinista, when it was founded, has been talked about as a possible candidate for the presidency once he retires. That will give you an idea that the army is really becoming professional, and we do not feel any threat from the police or from the army. I mean, that is really a big advance. I've said many times in Nicaragua publicly that it is time that we Nicaraguans learn to live with our differences rather than kill each other for them. However, we do keep on the lookout. We do believe that the real Sandinistas are a threat. We don't believe in what they say. We don't believe in them. And there is a hardcore that has remained exactly the same, and they have their followers. Right now in Nicaragua, the problem is that we are testing whether democracy works or not. And you can well realize that democracy that the measure of whether it works or not, it will be the well-being of the people, if they can feed their children well, if they can clothe them, if they have a roof to live under, if they can educate them, and really the social situation in Nicaragua is deteriorating. It has not improved since the Sandinista time. You must remember that the Sandinistas subsidized a lot of the economy, that they staticized everything, that they had immense bureaucracies, they had more people in every job, in every place of work than was needed. However, that was done on credit. And when the Sandinistas left the government, we owed $13 billion to the Soviet Union, to East Germany, and also to many of the Western countries, to Mexico, $100 million. The debt has been negotiated, and which really, I'll give you an example. It hasn't been in our favor. We owe the Soviet Union, I say we because we have to accept international debts, $3 billion. We didn't pay him a penny before. When the debt was negotiated, they condoned 90% of it. So it came down to $300 million. That was announced as a triumph of the Chamorro government that did it. But now we have to pay $30 million per year to the Soviets, which we weren't paying before. I've said to the Soviet representative there, have you ever paid for land lease? I said. I said, what's that? I said, well, I told him what it was. You know, it was a younger man. And he says, well, I said, you haven't paid a penny. Why are you making us pay? I said, maybe this government will have the capacity to negotiate again and to write off the debt against the land lease. Stan was asking me, what's Violeta Chamorro doing? Well, she's looked on, her popularity has gone up. She managed to steer Nicaragua in a very difficult time. Many times she was harshly criticized, as when she left Ortega as the head of the army back in 1990. Her popularity really went down at times, but now people tend to respect her and to speak well of her. She's in the same house where she lived before and while she was president. She wrote a book and she's promoting her book. She's gone to Spain and she's come here to the United States and traveled to other Latin American countries to sell her book. And she's, I guess, content with what she did. And people seem to appreciate her more every day. What's happened to what I told you, what's happened to General Ortega, the big nuisance we have is Daniel Ortega, who was the president. He is really a crazy man, I believe. A true believer, or whatever you would call him, to the day he dies. He knows how to destroy. He knows how to obstruct. He knows how to stop growth and progress. And he keeps on doing that, and he will keep on doing it. With this said, I believe that we can take some questions. No, it's almost, what? Oh, boy, I've talked more than I thought. It's 10 minutes to 10 already.
First of all, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
second, but I'll yield to Diana. Go ahead, Diana.
It's freedom. Right? It's freedom and liberty in all our hemisphere.
It's what?
It's freedom and liberty for all of us in this hemisphere. And oh.
Astounding figure.
I want to
make sure I've got it right. 50%
unemployment. 50% over 50% unemployment and overemployment. And underemployment.
Okay. Dan, you mentioned the fact that your exports are still only slightly more than half of what they were.
Yeah, well, 60% of what they were 20 years ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, putting all this in the framework of the discussions we've been having all day today, you need investments there, right? And
definitely.
So what is happening there is, and what is Ortega's, Daniel Ortega's, what is his position today? Is he in the legislature? Where is he?
Yeah, well, Ortega is in the legislature, however, he never attends. We have understudies, so we have what we call suplentes, vice congressmen or something like that, and they occupy.
We have vice congressmen. Also.
Yeah. And of course, the Sandinistas speak well. I mean, they sound okay, and they sound just like any of us. But the truth is that they are, I mean, this hardcore, I mean, the immense majority of them have forgotten about communism, about Sandinismo. They are trying to live a different life. However, the hardcore, and they find their adepts in the people who are without work, without jobs.
Now, what I was going for here is I'm trying to identify what would impede a flow of U.S. investment into Nicaragua. Are investors up here still nervous about Nicaragua because of an Ortega, or are you having success in getting investments there?
Well, investments have been coming into Nicaragua, but at a very slow pace. It has not kept up with population growth and with the work force that's every day it's bigger and bigger. One of the reasons, I would say, is that property is not clear yet. The property right is not clear for properties that were confiscated before. But any property that's acquired at this time has absolutely no problem. Really, there is no reason for foreign investment not to have come into Nicaragua in a bigger way. There are opportunities. Laws are very clear now. However, until the situation of confiscated property is not clear, until all Americans, especially, have been either compensated or given back their property, foreign investment will not be coming in as we would want or as we need.
All right. Jeff Gaynor, you commented upon the effort to force most out of office.
Well, because Somoza had a terrible press. His image was that of a monster. And President Carter was very close to Torrijos, very close to Carlos Andres Perez, very close to the, and these two were very close to the Costa Rican president, so Costa Rica loaned its territory for the invasion of Nicaragua by the Sandinistas. And really, Somoza was very stubborn, and Carter did not apply when he should have the pressure for Somoza to have left. And there were mistakes like this. In September of 1979, when it was still possible to force or to ease, I would say, Somoza out and to have a democratic government take over, Carter sent a letter, a private letter, said, commending Somoza on the improvement of human rights. And, of course, Somoza made the letter public. He had it on a one-page ad, and he publicized it all over the country. So the people said, well, I mean, look, there's no possibility of this U.S. president acting against Somoza. Let's go with the Sandinistas.
I have time for one more brief question.
I'd like to indicate publicly as a Cuban that Nicaragua is the only Latin American country today that has allowed a Cuban to accompany a delegation in Geneva in the Human Rights Convention. I want to indicate that we are extremely grateful for that. I want to also mention have indicated also that you have major problems in in property rights in Nicaragua. And this vindicates a Helms-Burton bill, in our case, of multilateral property rights for Cuba and for the American markets. So, really, to us, Nicaragua is very close, and that's why you get all of the help from us Cubans in the United States to help you. Not when you were there, but also now, because we know that you're with us.
Well, we certainly have been grateful to the Cubans because we really had their support while we were fighting the Sandinistas.
Thank you, Dalpo.
Okay. Thank you.
A few concluding announcements and comments. First of all, just a final notice on the tour tomorrow. The 9:45, there will be cars to go to the Mariachi Mass and to see some of the missions here in San Antonio. And if you want to know more about it, do talk to Diana Denman. I wanted to, we will be retiring back here in just about 1 minute, but just to acknowledge folks who have been so instrumental in making this marvelous weekend possible. First of all, the panels today, my brain is spinning. I've never absorb so much information and so much valuable information in so short a time. I, frankly, thought that our regional meeting in Williamsburg last November was right at the top of the list, but I would rank this one with that meeting. This has been a superb regional meeting. All our speakers panelists, moderators, I think, were just fabulous, and I would like to give them all a round of applause right now. Just a couple more things. I do want to acknowledge again the tremendous help of Diana Denman in everything that she did, and Joe Sullivan and the Landrum Society, and our tremendous staff at the Philadelphia Society. We have a very small bureaucracy, as you know. Julie Flick, where is Julie? She's probably working somewhere. And that's half of our bureaucracy right there. Our other bureaucrat is Bill Campbell. I want to thank Bill for unbelievable work. And Helen, I want to thank Helen. She's really not one of our bureaucrats. She's and David and Elizabeth Corey for just tremendous, diligent, faithful work that is flawless. Thank you. Thank you. Just a couple of final. I want to thank the audience and great questions, great discussion. As I said to Roberta Weil today, we do need to get you into assertiveness training. It was a great discussion and a concluding comment, and we will retire. I said this at our Journalism Center dinner Tuesday night, that things that seem impossible can become possible. I've lived a long time, and many things have happened in my lifetime that I never thought I would see. For example, I never, ever dreamed that Elton John would sing in Westminster Abbey. And yet, I have lived to see this. If that can happen, anything can happen. We are adjourned. The party is right through there. Thank you all.
Did I forget anyone?